Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Hello and welcome to Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Thanks for tuning into today's show. When I look back at all the shows in 2017, it just reminds me of the incredible women, and of course men too, who've made such a difference in this world, from the doctors and lawyers, branded reputation professionals, to entrepreneurs, healing coaches, corporate wellness professionals, and philanthropists. So many different types of professionals and personalities have shared their passion and their challenges on this show. And I think that's what I love so much about Women Worldwide. It's the knowledge sharing and the learning that you walk away with. But I don't think we've ever had a volcanologist and a professional field scientist who's running for Congress in California ever on the show. So that's my segue into today's special guest. Joining me is Jess Phoenix. In addition to what I just mentioned, Jess is executive director, principal investigator, and co-founder of Revolutionary Environmental Scientific Research Organization called Blueprint Earth. She's also a fellow in the Explorers Club, a featured scientist on the Discovery Channel and Science Channel, and a TEDx speaker. Her work has been covered in Popular Science magazine, NASA's Fame Lab, on National Public Radio, CNN International, and on This Week in Science. Her mission is to inspire everyone to tap into their innate curiosity, igniting wonder about our planet and the world we live in. Jess, it's great to have you on my show. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Deirdre. This is great. It's such a wonderful platform, and it's really an honor to be here.
Well, we are honored to have you here. And I think I said volcanologist.
Yep, correctly. You got it. You got it. Volcanologist. That's me.
That's so cool. So I mentioned that you're a volcanologist, a professional field scientist. You're running for Congress. Maybe you can just tell us how you got started in the field of science.
Well, it wasn't something I never planned on being a geologist who specializes in volcanoes. That's a little easier to have flow off the tongue. But I always liked science and I was always a very curious person, even when I was a little kid. But I had a really bad experience in a high school chemistry class that really turned me off from science, which was unfortunate because I had wanted to be a veterinarian. So I changed courses, focused on English and then history. And I actually majored in history as an undergrad at Smith College, Women's College, woohoo. And yep. But then I had taken a couple of geology classes because I just by accident, I took some and realized that they were amazing. And they answered questions about the world and the universe that I had just never thought that I could access, that information. It just never even seemed like something I could do. And no one had ever said to me, you know what, geology is a career. So I ended up going back and getting a master's degree in geology after working for a couple of years using my history degree. So it was really not a linear path. And it shows me that being curious about a number of different things is okay. You don't have to focus or specialize too early because you can change directions and move from, say, humanities to science or vice versa.
Yeah, I think it's really great that you sort of went back to your passion, even though you had a bad experience, which shows that nothing was going to stop you from getting to where you wanted to be. Your work has been on so many different continents. And I don't know if you have a favorite adventure or a biggest adventure, but maybe just share, some of the types of work that you do so people can understand.
Oh, sure. It's one of the great things about being a geologist is that there are literally rocks everywhere. So
it's easy to find them, huh?
Yep. And when you are studying geology, you actually, as part of the course requirements, you get to take field trips. So it sounds like something that you do in, you know, junior high school, and maybe you go to the planetarium. But no, we actually go out to remote locations and we hike around, we dig holes, we do scientific experiments, we collect data, and then we, you know, we have campfires. So it's fun. It's like fun and work. And so I love that about it. And I say yes to all the different opportunities that have been presented to me. So one of the neat things I was able to do was after I had finished my master's, written the thesis, gotten the degree, did all that stuff, I got invited to go on a National Geographic and National Science Foundation funded research expedition to the Andes, the Peruvian Andes, 15 kilometers. That's cool. So like, yeah, that's, you know, 7 miles from Machu Picchu. And I was just, I couldn't believe how lucky I was, but it was a colleague of mine who had worked with me when I was doing my master's thesis work. And so he thought that I would be good for this, invited me to go along, and I said yes. And, you know, we went down there and it was so intense. It was, you know, almost a month of time. And, I got injured while in the city.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I was in Cusco, which is the city you have to stay in for a couple of days because it's about 12,000 feet elevation and you have to acclimatize. And so I had to stay there for a couple of days. I was walking around the city before our big expedition and holding a camera, taking pictures. And there was a manhole cover that was not screwed on and I fell into it. And so
it's horrible.
Yes. Yes. I was hip deep in Peruvian sewer water and and I got really injured. Like I had a quadriceps contusion, which any doctor will tell you means you can't really bend your leg. So then I had to, you know, not only was it disgusting, but, you know, I realized, we're about to go trekking in the Andes and, you know, and so I had to deal with that the whole trip. I mean, it was my leg wouldn't bend right. And, you know, we were up there. We got snowed in. We had horse thieves show up. They had to. Yeah, I mean, it was a whole crazy thing. But we
it's like
get
adventures you would see on TV or in the movies.
Exactly. And so, you know, we made it out. I mean, everything was fine. It looked like my leg, my entire leg, basically from my mid quadricep down to my mid calf turned black. So it was a little disgusting. But we were okay. Everyone made it out fine. No casualties. And we did really good science that got my colleague, Joe, his work has actually gotten the cover of Science Magazine, which is a really big deal as a scientist.
That's huge.
Yep. So, I mean, you always have to think about what the greater cause is. And that's what keeps you going, even when it's rough, because it's not all fun and games. It's not all campfires. I mean, sometimes you deal with horse thieves.
Absolutely. I mean, that's scary. What are the conditions? I mean, is it roughing it? Like, are there places where you can sleep comfortably and go to the bathroom comfortably or no?
Nope. I mean, I the longest I've gone without showering has been a month. And that's a month of sleeping in tents, pooing in holes in the ground that you dig. Yep. So, I mean, And, you know, I was not prepared for that when I went into geology because I think I had never even peed outdoors. I don't know. I was athletic.
And now you're a pro.
Oh, yeah. And, no, but I was athletic, but I played sports. I didn't go camping. That wasn't what my family did. And so I had never camped until I was like 21. So I learned as an adult. And, you know, that's, again, it's another point there that you can get into things at any age. It doesn't require you doing it from, you know, when you're five or anything like that.
Right. Well, that's good for everybody to know.
Yep.
So you can teach an old dog new tricks.
Yes.
Excellent. So with all of this going on, and I think I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to throw it out anyway. Why did you decide to go into politics?
So, you know, as a scientist, I work in the world of facts and evidence. And seeing what Trump was saying he was going to do to science funding and, you know, just to social justice issues and civil rights and, you know, things like that, I thought, you know, okay, we got to see what happens. And as he got elected and then started to influence the culture, I saw that a lot of our elected representatives were just falling in line behind him, including my own, Steve Knight. Steve Knight has voted 98% with Trump since the election. Yeah. And our district voted for Hillary by 7 points. So, you know, that's not the will of the people. And I thought, well, really what this amounts to, it's an all-out assault on truth and evidence and facts. And I can't deal with that as a scientist. That doesn't work for me. So I thought, look, if we don't have scientists stepping up and saying, I want to be a voice for the facts and I want to make evidence-based policy be how we run our country, no one's going to do it. I mean, scientists have to start getting out of the lab, getting out of the field, and saying, look, I want to have a say in politics. And so I decided, hey, why not? Better do it.
I think that's excellent. You know, having, there's so much work that you can do, and it can be spread out through your writing, or it can be on the Science or the Discovery Channel, but you can truly elevate your voice and make a difference when you get into politics.
Yes.
At that level.
Yes, that's exactly it. Because, you know, what grates on me is when you hear these politicians make decisions that harm hundreds of thousands of people or millions of people or impact our entire planet's future. And they go, well, I'm not a scientist, but, and I'm like, okay, that's going to stop. Because if I was there, I'd go, well, I am a scientist. Yes. And.
Right. Yep. Exactly. And facts, you know, it is about the facts, the numbers, the statistics. So do you think we're going to see more scientists like you get involved in politics?
Yeah. You know, I'm not sure specifically about volcanologists. There aren't a ton of us running around.
Yeah, how many are there? Do you know? Do you have a number of how many volcanologists there are in the world?
Well, there's volcanologists who do different things, but volcanologists who do kind of what I do, there's about 90 around the world. So yeah, there's not a ton. And even then, like, it's not a huge field, but it's a field where, you know, there's a lot of need for scientists who are researching volcanic eruptions, but, you know, it's dependent on how much funding we get is how many people can be studying them, because we don't know them. We don't know them intimately. We don't understand everything about volcanoes yet. And we actually don't even, we can't predict eruptions.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really fascinating. So I want to talk to you about social media and getting the word out about your work and your passion. How are you using social media? Would you say a lot, or you're just sort of kind of exploring with it?
Oh, I've been using it a lot. I started out using Facebook more because I was more familiar with Facebook. In fact, I had an account. I was one of the first 1,000 people to have a Facebook account back in 2004.
Oh my.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I
went to school near Harvard, but, you know, like, so it passed to us quickly. But it was, you know, of course I deleted that account because, as you do, and then I got a new one. But, so Facebook was really familiar, and that was an easy thing for me to start doing. But then as the campaign has picked up steam, I've shifted more of my attention to Twitter, because
that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Yeah. You can
not at all.
You can get a lot of information out in Twitter, relatively quickly. And people like that you can engage with them in almost real time. And, I think that's really useful. I also think it's nice because if you have a Twitter account, you can theoretically talk to anybody who has one. And, you know, who knows, even somebody with a massive following may respond to you. And I think that's why Twitter seems to be kind of the leader in just communicating with constituents, and communicating with people all around the world or around the country to tell them about what, you know, my work is. And I think, you know, not all elected officials are tech savvy, and not all the candidates running for office are tech savvy. And I think that having that as a, you know, in your corner is an advantage in this day and age.
Right. Because you're with the people.
Yep.
And the people are definitely on Twitter and Facebook, and there's Instagram and LinkedIn and so many Snapchat.
I haven't started that yet.
Both millennials and younger.
Yeah.
Well, it definitely skews to a younger audience, but you absolutely want younger audiences, whether it's Gen Z or our millennials, to know the facts about climate. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So with social media, you know, clearly it seems like you love it, but are there any parts that concern you?
Oh yeah, I'm extremely concerned about social media's impacts on kids. In fact, I read a study recently, I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was something like suicide attempts among young women who have social media accounts have more than tripled, I believe.
That's scary.
So yeah and you know, there's so many implications for young people, young women in particular, but also for LGBTQ folks, anybody who is, I would say, marginalized in any way. And it's just because there is so much pressure to have that best life out there. And it's also scary because it gives people a platform for bullying. And that's not just kids.
The bullying.
Oh, yeah, that's everybody. And, you know, I mean, I don't know about you, but I was bullied in middle school, elementary school. And, you know, it is something I wouldn't wish on anyone. And it's, you know, when people are parents and when they work in education, they have to be very diligent about making sure that the kids they work with are not being bullied on social media. And if so, they have to have resources for those kids because it's scary.
Absolutely. You need resources. And, you know, some of these newer platforms, that there's one, actually it was a young professional just wrote a post on my blog. And I want to say it's TBH, but there's a new platform where it's anonymous. And, you know, you younger kids, either Gen Z or millennials are on there. And you can share kind of how you're feeling and you don't have to say who you are. And it's just sounds like such a platform for bullying and not positive. So I really think we have to watch social media and educate and somehow balance out the very, very good that we can use it for with all of the negative.
Yeah, exactly.
It's tough.
Mm-hmm.
It's really tough.
It is.
So what do you think it takes to be a leader today? So we do have some powerful folks with big voices out there through social media, through all of our channels. You know, how should our leaders be positioning themselves, or how can they be better role models?
I would say that it's, you know, you have to put, you know, and again, I say this as a scientist who loves facts and evidence, but you have to actually put people first. You have to, you know, not just cling to any sort of partisan platform or any kind of, I would say, profit motive. You sort of have to kind of, and that goes for not just political leaders, but, you know, for anybody, you have to look at people above all of those things. And you have to kind of remember that you can have all the facts and evidence you want, but you need to temper them with a conscience and with heart, because we're all in this together and we're all humans. And that, to me, is a stronger connecting influence than any sort of dividing influence is. So I think as a leader, you need to be willing to back up your positions with facts and evidence, but you have to first and foremost keep people and the people you're working for at the front of everything you do. Because that's really what defines a leader, is somebody who can go out there and truly prioritize and not just, you know, throw people to the side and, you know, win at all costs. You have to be willing to look at things on a very human level.
Absolutely. And if you're putting people first, then chances are you're listening more, which I think is hugely important for any leader. And you're having empathy for them. And in order to solve problems and get to solutions, you really have to understand what's going on. So I agree with you, people first. Maybe you can just touch on some of your biggest challenges with what you're doing and how you overcome obstacles.
The good thing is that dealing with challenges and obstacles is kind of the stock and trade of field scientists. We work in remote, hostile locations, trying to do sometimes very delicate work, and we have to deal with things, problems that arise that, I mean, you can foresee some things, but you can't foresee everything. I mean, you think, okay, wild animals, civil unrest, you know, harsh weather, you know, maybe people will get dehydrated or, you know, heat stroke, something like that, or maybe they'll get hypothermia. You can foresee those things, but there will, I guarantee you, there will always be something that goes wrong that you can't plan for. And so, you know, with the work I do, I always try to plan for everything and then have extra things in mind just in case something crazy happens. And, you know, that's sort of something that I'm taking into this race for Congress, because this is uncharted territory for me. And first time candidates generally, you know, you're somebody who's wanted to get into politics, and I never wanted to be in politics in this way. Like, I thought, you know, oh, maybe someday, maybe I'll do something politically, but it wasn't, I'm going to run for Congress. And so I haven't spent my whole career being groomed for this and building these networks. And so the unforeseen challenges in this particular thing I'm doing are really around the fact that I did not know how much money dictates everything in politics. I mean, you hear it, but you don't actually know how deeply connected money is to who gets on the ballot. Mm. And it's just, so I've been, you know, adapting as I go, just like I do in the field. And I've been changing my campaign. And, you know, that's, I just look at every challenge as something that we are humans. We are so adaptable. So that's what we have to do. We have to adapt to the challenges. And that means be flexible, be creative, and solve those problems.
Yeah. I mean, I think the advice you're giving spans for everybody and whatever challenges you face, mm-hmm. because we are human.
Yeah.
So flexible, adaptable. And what you said about planning for everything, I can so relate to that, because when you're in public relations, you kind of have to have a plan A, a plan B, and then there's always plan C. Right.
Yes.
So Jess, I'm just going to ask you to hold your thoughts for a moment. We're going to take a super quick break to give some love to our sponsor. And I also want to mention that Women Worldwide has joined the C-Suite Radio Network. So you can find all of our shows at c-suiteradio.com. And while you're there, you might want to check out the other great business podcasts as well.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communication and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from awareness to action and impact by offering a digital marketing roadmap. Let us help you foster deeper engagement and forge stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformancecom.com. That's pureperformancecom with two M's.com.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Welcome back to the show. Jess Phoenix and I were chatting about her work as a field scientist and why she's running for Congress. So Jess, we were really hitting some interesting points. You were just talking about some of the challenges, and you gave great advice. So I'm kind of wondering if there's maybe one piece of advice that you've received that maybe really stuck with you throughout your career that maybe you want to share with everybody.
You know, it's interesting. I'm not exactly sure who gave this piece of advice to me, but it's something that I sort of I picked up from somewhere. And if anyone wants to claim credit for influencing me this way, they should come forward. Maybe they're listening. Who knows? It's a piece of advice that I always give to my field research students with the nonprofit that I run. These are college and university students, and we even have elementary school kids that we work with in the classroom. But, you know, I tell them that, you know, you have to say yes to everything. And that doesn't mean like literally everything, especially because there's, you know, as we've been hearing in the media, there's a lot of people who want to use that to their advantage and disadvantage you. But I mean it in the context of, if someone offers you an opportunity to do something, even if it's something you're not comfortable with, say yes to it, because you don't know where that opportunity is going to take you. And you can't get anywhere by saying no. I mean, you'll just sit at home. Saying yes is what gets you out of the house and what gets you job opportunities, internships, scholarships, you know, just the chance to expand your world. So it's basically, you know, say yes. And that's kind of how I live my life. And that's what I tell my students they ought to do.
Oh my gosh. I think that's really, really great advice, whoever gave it to you. I do the same thing. I mean, I also say you have to say no, but for the right reasons.
Yes.
But the yes, there's something about stepping out of your comfort zone. And I call them these mini defining moments. And whatever, if you say yes to something that is quite different, that is a new opportunity, it has a positive compound effect that leads to another really important mini moment that you can say yes. And then when you put all of these moments together, you get this big defining moment where when you say yes, it's like, aha, or that grand opportunity. So I just feel like all those yeses compound into something really big and that we shouldn't miss the mini moment.
Yeah. And I think,
which is usually uncomfortable. Yeah,
exactly. And I think that the other part of that is that, you know, as you say yes, you will be nervous. You will be, you know, you'll think, oh, did I get myself into something, you know, that's a little bit over my depth, or, you know, but that's okay. That's the only way you grow, is by challenging, you know, what you know as comfortable.
Absolutely. Because if you're always comfortable, you really don't get to the next level, and then you don't get asked for those opportunities, especially if you say no, 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 because then you're actually sending out a vibe to others that say that even if you're saying no, the timing's bad, it still comes across to somebody else as, well, maybe underlying, she really doesn't want to do this if you say no enough.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's right.
So you miss that opportunity. Maybe you could also share who has influenced you the most in your life, in your work, and was it because you observed this individual, and it's because of them it makes you who you are today?
You know, I think I've been lucky. I've had a couple of really influential people who were teachers in different ways for me, you know, ranging from, you know, I had an amazing high school English teacher who really pushed the boundaries of, you know, what an English class should be. And then I also had fantastic, a master's thesis advisor in grad school who was phenomenal. And then, but you know, I think I want to talk about my boss at my internship at the Hawaiian Volcano Observatory. His name is Frank Truesdell, and he'd be super embarrassed. Well, I don't know, embarrassed is the right word, but he would roll his eyes if I'm talking about him like this. But Frank is a really amazing person. He is the lead researcher for the Mauna Loa volcano. So one guy is in charge of researching this, the world's largest volcano. And Frank is part Native Hawaiian, part Puerto Rican. And, you know, he grew up in Hawaii, and he started out doing forestry and then went into geology, you know, after doing forestry. And he is one of the smartest and least flappable scientists I've ever met. I mean, Frank, I don't know if Frank gets excited ever during like a dangerous situation or a happy situation. Yeah. Frank excited is like, he is just so even keeled that, you know, it doesn't matter what the problem is. He just analyzes it, says, yep, you know, we're going to take care of that, and just gets it done. And so, you know, for me, I'm super high energy, and it was really great to work with somebody like him, who's a brilliant scientist and just a really, really thoughtful, really perceptive person. And he really showed me that, you know, it doesn't matter what your problem is if it's an erupting volcano, a flat tire, like God knows what, you just look at it and you just take it apart piece by piece, and you figure out how you're going to get out of the situation you're in, and you just do your job.
Yeah, he sounds awesome.
No, he is. He's got a great sense of humor, too.
Oh, well, that makes it even better. You know, I'm sure you learned a ton from him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
You know, as you've progressed in your career, and you've certainly met and watched and folks have influenced you, and I'm sure you've had so many achievements, maybe you could just share what success actually looks like to you, and what that means in the short term and maybe even the long term too, because everybody views success differently, regardless of their achievements.
That's true. And I think that, you know, I've had varying definitions of success over the course of my life. When I was younger, it used to be about, you know, did I win the sports competition? Did I get the best grade? You know, that sort of thing. And as I've gotten older, I've realized that it's not just about being number one. So now for me, it's about, you know, whose life did I influence positively? Did I make a difference for somebody? And somebody to me can encompass people or animals. But it's basically just, you know, do my actions make the world a better place? And to me, bottom line, like that's what I want to do both in the short term and the long term. I want to leave this world better for whoever's path I cross and whoever comes after me. I just want to make sure that my contributions are positive.
I think that's wonderful. I just feel like, I mean, competition is always healthy, of course, but there's just, you sort of have to know when to stop going for the win, right? Like it's not just about winning. We're going to win. I would rather be helping and, like you said, really making a difference and creating impact that's on such a broad scale. And I think that speaks to, you know, we are so much, there's so much more than just ourselves. Like we are a small part of something that's really big. But together, if we put all those small pieces together, look at what we can do.
Right.
Create a lot of impact. But with all of this, Jess, certainly is stress. I mean, there has to be stress in your life, stress at work. So what do you think, how are you handling stress and what are some of those stress busters?
Well, for me, you know, it may be different for other people, but I am a total animal person. I rescue animals, and right now I have two rescued horses, three rescued.
Oh, that's neat. Yeah.
Three rescued dogs, two rescued cats, and three rescued birds. So for me, spending time with them really helps me when I'm stressed out because they don't care about politics. They don't care about anybody, you know, except for who's there with them right at that moment, you know. And so they're very good at living in the moment, and they allow me to just sort of enjoy being in their company. You know, I can pet them, I can talk to them, I can play with them. With the horses, you know, you can groom them, you can ride them. If they're healthy enough to be ridden, that's of course every horse, right. Horse person's, it's our difficulty, it's our challenge. Is the horse healthy? But no, it's just nice to have that interaction with them because, you know, they don't have an agenda. They just want to spend time with you. So for me, being around them really helps me sort of get rid of stress.
Oh, no, it's so true. I'm definitely an animal person. And I wonder, when you rescue animals, so you mentioned the horses, the birds, the dogs, et cetera, mm-hmm. Are you going to them somewhere or are they coming to you? So I know mm-hmm. folks who rescue dogs and they actually have the dogs on their property. So do you have the horses on your property?
Yes, I do.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah, we got the property where we live specifically so that we could have the horses on it. And it's we go and we get them from, I've been doing this since college, but going to racetracks and finding horses who are going to be sent to slaughter, horses are not slaughtered in the U.S. anymore. So they are trucked to Canada or Mexico, which is a long and terrifying ride. And they're not slaughtered in a way they're slaughtered in a way that's good for cows, but not good for horses. So it's just not right. Humane. And it's a really terrible, sad system. But so I've been, you know, rescuing them for, gosh, more a decade and a half or so. And, you know, right now I have two and, you know, they're ex-race horses. So they only know how to run and that's it. So when we get them off the track, the idea is just to give them new training, new skills, let them come off the drugs they give them when they're racing.
Right.
You know, you do that first and then you start building them back up and giving them skills and then you can find them new homes and in there because they have a whole new life ahead of them.
So you mentioned the drugs. Are the drugs legal drugs that are given to them because it's like ibuprofen for inflammation because they're running? Or is this not a legal drug?
Some
like
of the
enhancement?
Yeah, some of them are legal, some of them are illegal. And it's just, you know, they try to regulate it. I mean, the racing industry tries really, really hard, but there are trainers mm-hmm. out there who are not ethical and will, you know, give their horses performance enhancing drugs. And it's just a shame because, you know, they're living creatures. Yeah, they don't have a choice. They just have to sit there.
They're so beautiful.
I know.
Absolutely beautiful. Yep. Oh, I'm so happy that you're helping them. That's great to hear. So with everything, it sounds like, you know, tackling stress, animals absolutely help. While you're, excuse me, getting de-stressed, do you ever fully unplug? So we were talking about social media before and how you find it so useful. Do you ever find yourself wanting to unplug, step away from technology, get away from science, even though it's your passion? How often do you do that, or is it absolutely impossible?
Well, when I'm out doing research expeditions in remote places, oftentimes we have no connections. But the thing is, that's still work. I guess when my husband and I go out and we do things with our nonprofit, we don't have social media connections. But again, I guess that's work. So I don't know. I mean, when I'm on vacation for fun, which is rare, I think the last pure vacation I took was like 2 years ago. we only went to Florida, so we still had, internet connections and everything. So I don't, but I do have times where I just don't engage in it. You know, I won't open Facebook. I won't open Twitter. And it's more just, it's not like, like I plan it out in advance. Some days I'm just sick of it. And so I just won't do it. And I think it's having that discipline to be able to put it down. And if I'm not near it, it's totally fine. Like the world progresses, whether or not you're on Instagram that day.
Oh, absolutely. I think, yeah, getting over FOMO, right? Fear of missing out is step number one. And it keeps going. You know, in the beginning and when working with companies, we always talked about how you have to be very regular in your sharing and, you know, you always have to be there to be engaging with people. But you can step away for a period of time. And like you said, Instagram keeps going and so does Twitter and so do all of them. So it really is more healthy to learn about yourself. And like you said, if you get sick of it, you move away and then it makes you kind of want to go back to see what's going on. So exactly. I totally agree. Mm-hmm. How about some advice? Although you've given a lot of advice so far, maybe just, I don't know, overall to professionals who are listening about pursuing their goals and their passion. And like you said, how sometimes it's not that linear path. What do you say to them?
I think that, you know, some of the best advice I can give in this category would be, you know, you don't have to be the best, but you have to be so good that they can't ignore you. And, you know, that is... it's sort of like a life thing too. I mean, there's always going to be somebody who is smarter, who is prettier, who is stronger, who is faster, who, you know, can type faster or who can put words together in a way that's a little more eloquent than you can. There always is going to be somebody somewhere in the world who's better than you at whatever it is you think you're the best at. I mean, there's 7 billion of us out there. So,
yes.
So what you have to do is be the best you can be and every day. And that changes. Some days you're going to be firing on all cylinders and some days you're going to be like, just leave me alone. But if you try every single day to just give your best for that day, then you're going to end up, you're going to be good. You're going to be good at what you do. And they won't be able to ignore the fact that you're good at it. And that's how you make progress. It's not by being the fastest constantly. It's by being the steadiest and by showing up and just showing people how much you care about whatever it is you're trying to do.
I love that you said be the steadiest.
Yeah.
That's so smart because that is such a key to there's a lot of, I don't know, I find with entrepreneurs or CEOs or different professionals that are not sticking with certain things and not letting it progress naturally. And that it's, you know, you move in at like lightning speed and if it doesn't work out, you sort of shift and move into something else. And in order to be your best you, like you said, you really have to show up and be diligent and keep going and be the very best that you can be. And then in the end, it is going to show. And nobody can be you.
Yes.
Right? So nobody can be you, Jess Phoenix. That's awesome. Well, one last question, and it is super easy. Where can people find out more about you and your work?
Yes.
And your campaign.
Yes.
Of course.
Okay. So the campaign website is jess2018.com. My website for speaking engagements, for science work is volcanojess.com. And I'm on Twitter mostly under the campaign account now. So that's at jessphoenix2018, 2018. And then I'm on Facebook. It's facebook.com/jessphx, like the letters of the Phoenix airport code. Everyone goes, PHX, and I'm like, yeah, it's how you abbreviate Phoenix.
It's easy to remember.
Yep. And then I have a personal Instagram, which is fine. That's Volcano Jess Official. And then there's my campaign one, which is Jess Phoenix 2018.
I love it. I love Volcano Jess. Yeah. It's like so powerful.
Well, and it works. All I mean, right. It's what I do, right? Branding. It's key.
Exactly. Jess, it's all in the branding. Thank you so much for coming on the show, sharing your journey. You just gave us a lot to think about, important information, insights, and loved hearing about your work and your mission. So we really appreciate everything. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure. I really appreciate it.
Oh, well, my pleasure. And I also want to thank all of you for tuning into Women Worldwide. Until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.